Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ananta Koti Vaishnava Yuki Iskan Ponga Charana Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glories to the Sangha devotees, all glories to the Sangha devotees, all glories to the Sangha. All glories to Sushi Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text 22 and 23. So we could do 22 together and then 23 responses. Tashyam tritasyo shanaso manuscha. Ritoratagnir asitasya vayo Tirtam sudasasya garam guhasya Ya Ashraddha Devasya Sa Asisseve. Translation. On the bank of the river Saraswati, there were 11 places of pilgrimage, namely Trita, Ushana, Manu, Pritu, Agni, Asita, Vayu, Sudasa, Go, Guha, and Shradadeva. Vidura visited all of them and duly performed rituals. Text 23, okay. Anyani Cheya Dvija Deva Devai. Tani Nanyan Tanani Vishnu. Pratyanga Mukhya Nikita Mandirani.
Pratyanga Mukhya Nikita Mandirani.
Yat Darshanat Krishnam Anusmaranti. Yani Cheha Dvija Deva Deva Yirtani Nananyantanani Vishnu Pratyanga Mukhyankita Mandirani Yadarshanat Krishnam Anusmaranti.
Each and every
Anga, part,
Mukhya,
the chief, chief. Like Barmokia the chief, right? Ankita Mark.
Ankita Mark.
Mandirani.
Mandirani.
Temples.
Temples.
Yat.
Yat.
Whips.
Whips.
Darsana.
Darsana.
By seeing from a distance.
By seeing from a distance.
Krishnan.
Krishna.
The original personality of God. Anus, Anus Maranti, constantly remembers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. There are also many other temples of various forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, established by great sages and demigods. These temples were marked with the chief emblems of the Lord, and they reminded one always of the original personality of God or Krishna. Purport. Human society is divided into four social orders of life and four spiritual divisions, applying to each and every individual person. This system is called Varnashram Dharma and has already been discussed in many places in this great literature. The sages are persons who completely devoted themselves to the spiritual upliftment of the entire human society, who are known as Dvijagai, the best amongst the twice born. The denizens of superior planets, from the moon planet and upwards, were known as Devas. Both the Dvijadevas and the Devas always established temples of Lord Vishnu in his various forms, such as Govinda, Madhusudana, Nashimha, Madhava, Keshava, Narayana, Padmanabha, Parthasarathi, and many others. The Lord expands himself in innumerable forms, but all of them are none different from one another. Lord Vishnu has four hands, and each hand holds a particular item, either conch shell, wheel, club, or lotus flower. Of these four emblems, the chakra or wheel is the chief. Lord Krishna, being the original Vishnu form, has only one emblem, namely the wheel, and therefore he is sometimes called the chakra. The Lord's chakra is a symbol of the power by which the Lord controls the whole manifestation. The tops of Vishnu temples are marked with the symbol of the wheel, so that people may have the chance to see the symbol from a very long distance and at once remember Lord Krishna. The purpose of building very high temples is to give people a chance to see them from a distance place. This system is carried on in India whenever a new temple is constructed, and it appears that it is coming down from a time before recorded history. The foolish propaganda by atheists that temples were constructed only in later days is refuted here, because Vidura visited these temples at least 5,000 years ago, and the temples of Vishnu were in existence long, long before Vidura visited them. The great sages and demigods never established statues of men or demigods, but they established temples of Vishnu for the benefit of common men, to raise them to the platform of God consciousness. Om Gyana Charmanasya Gyananjana Shabhateya Sakshini Kandiya Dasana Shri Vajra Om Krishna Padaya Krishna Shasha Vikishna Shabhateya Dasana Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauramana Kishani Vishishya Shumbara Shvashya Chayana Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Tananda Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Svartanya Svayam Rupa Paramaya Nidadi Svartyam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, everybody. This is the pilgrim's path, the pilgrim's journey. Mahatma Vidura, he has left the kingdom and he's in the forest now, and he's traversing the path that's been traversed by many other great personalities in the past. And this is the way of the Mahajans. They visit the innumerable sacred rivers, lakes, mountains, holy sites, ghats, temples, and sages. By doing this, they're able to get purification and to give purification. It's stated that when one goes to the holy places, these places are packed with spiritual potency, spiritual powers. But sometimes some of these Mahajans, they are so powerful that they also give spiritual potency to these holy places. See? And so this is what Vidura himself did. He was not an ordinary personality. Socially he was an outcast. But spiritually he was a very great personality, Mahajan. Mahatma, he was called Mahatma Vidura. When you read about Vidura, it breaks your heart sometimes to see. I mean, he can be compared to Maharaj Yudhisthira in terms of truthfulness and fairness and advancement in spirituality. He was so compassionate for the Pandavas that even though he was living with Dhritarashtra, but he was actually taking care of he was looking to the welfare of the Pandavas constantly. Because being in the palace, he knew he would hear everything that's going on with Duryodhan, Dhritarashtra, Karna, Shakuni, and so forth. So then, in one sense, you could say he was like even a spy for the Pandavas. But this was a good term, you know. The spy in this case was a good term because he was protecting the pure devotees of the Lord. See? The Pandavas are constantly getting the association of the Lord, and they're actually pure devotees. But they were so ill-treated by the Kauravas that it breaks one heart to hear about the atrocities they went through. So Vidura was constantly on the lookout. And so he had, when the Pandavas were sent to that wax palace, he spoke to Yudhisthira in Melicha language, it's stated. And this is what he told him. He's speaking in a way that people cannot really understand so much. He said, "He who knows the evil plans that his enemies contrive in accordance with politics should act so as to avoid all the danger. He who knows that there are sharp weapons that are not made of steel, and who understands how to ward them off, escapes calamity in the hands of his foes. Be on guard, make your abode like that of a jackal, having many outlets. The consumer of straw and wood and the evaporator of water cannot harm one who stays within a hole deep within the woods." So this was a clue he gave to Yudhisthira, you see, because because Duryodhana also had spies, and had he spoken like literally, then the spies would have gone back to Duryodhana. So he spoke in the language of the Malichas, sometimes when I speak to Keshava, I speak in Jamaican language, Guyanese tongue, you know, nobody else could understand. Yeah, but he understands. So Vidura was speaking like this, and Yudhisthira understood, and they were able to go through that calamity easily. Then he said, then later on he sent a miner to help them, and the miner told him, the palace will be burnt on the 14th night of the dark moon. See? So he sent that message. And so the Pandavas were able to ward off that that great calamity, because they would have been burnt to ashes. That palace was made of wax and ghee and oil and all flammable materials, straw and everything, you see? So Vidura was constantly on the lookout for the Pandavas. And so now he's on the pilgrim's path, and he's been traversing all these places. Now he's on the bank of the Saraswati River, and he's visiting these holy places. These holy places were actually created by great personalities, or established by great personalities, because here are the names. Trita, Ushana, Manu, we know Manu, Prithu, Agni, Asita, Vayu, Sudas, Go. I don't know who is Go, but I mean Go could have come from the word Gokarna or something. Then you have Guha. Guha was a personality in the Ramayana. He had helped Lord Ramachandra. He was a good friend to Dasharatha. He got Shradadev. Vidura visited all of them and duly performed rituals. So these holy places he visited. And Saraswati is not existing anymore, but it's not an ordinary place to. In the Manu Samhita, it's stated from the sacred Saraswati to the Drishvavati River. That place created by the gods is called Brahmavarti. So that is a very powerful place. Let the Brahmanas reside on that tract of land. See? That's Manu saying that. And he said from the Himavat to the Vindhya, that tract of land is called Aryavarti, the land of the Aryans. Stated that land where the spotted deer roams is fit for sacrifice. You see? So all these regions actually Vidura traverse. And they're special. They're special in the sense because all the rivers, the Ganges is coming from the toe of the Lord, the Jamuna, the Saraswati, they're all interconnected and they're all special because they've been touched by the Lord and they've been traversed by great sages. You have, like, within the Himalaya regions, you have the Ganges, the Brahmaputra, you have the Sutlej, and you have the Alakananda River. That's also a special river. I strongly feel that river has a connection with the name Allah itself, that the Muslim worship, but we could talk about that another time. But so this tract of land is called Aryavarta, and it's special. And so not only Vidura, but when the Pandavas were in exile, they visited many, many holy places and all these in this tract of land. And you know who else did that? Lord Ramachandra. And if you read the pathway of Lord Ramachandra, he had visited so many of these holy places. First, he went to a place called Chitrakoot. And here he established his ashram. Welcome. He lived there for many, many years with Bharat and... with Lakshman and Sita in Chitrakuta. And they would visit the sages. They would visit the sages and then they would discuss. Machata madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam. Katayantascha nit mam nityam tushyanti charamanticha. The devotees, the great devotees, they discuss the pastimes of the Lord. And they constantly discuss his pastimes and his glories. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Mahabharata and Ramayana, but I think you are. You would see that the Pandavas, they would go and meet the great sages, the other, and they would sit like in a campfire. In the Western world, they do that too, but they have like a grill and they're doing different things. So they sit in this campfire and discussing pastimes of the Lord. And it's stated that the Pandavas were so eager, they're pushing the head over the other brother head to listen what the sages are saying. You know, Gautama Muni, Atri Muni, Vashishta, Romapad, Vishwamitra, Lomahamsa, so many great sages, and in that region it's full with great, powerful sages. Like within the universal administration, there are six powerful sages: Vishwamitra, Vashishta, Gautama, Bharadwaj, Renuka. But there's six of them, and these great sages, they are packed with spiritual potency. So the Pandavas, they would go and listen to the sages, and they would discuss pastimes of the Lord. They would discuss how the world came about. They would discuss how the species came about. So many different things. I could remember Markandeya Rishi was explaining the ages from Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, and the symptoms of the ages and so forth. And they would explain, and the Pandavas would listen attentively. When Lord Ramachandra went to Chitrakuta, he stated that the rishis were so powerful that they would glow, their body would glow with ascetic powers. You could possibly see the glow on them, how they were so powerful, and the ashrams were packed with potency also. I mean, we have now those places are still there, but it's not like in Treta Yuga. In Kali Yuga, there's a great difference. And some reason would be like so many sinful people would go to those places and leave their sin and so forth. So with time, that the potency of those places would deteriorate. See? Some of these sages, they are still in their subtle form, still existing. Some might have gone to the heavenly planets and so forth. Some might have gone back to their other planets that they came from. But during that time, it stated, during Lord Ramachandra, it was packed with potency. Then from Chitrakuta, Lord Ramachandra went to Dandaka, the Dandaka forest. And there he met, you know who? Atri Muni. Atri Muni is one of the mind-born sons of Lord Rama. And his wife, what's her name? Anasuya. It's stated Anasuya gave Sita Devi a celestial garment that would never fade or anything. You guys remember when Sita went into the forest, she dressed herself like in bark. You know, bark and some grass and stuff like that. So when she met Anasuya, she gave her a celestial garment, and he says she gave her celestial cosmetics also. See, so I don't know, so then there Lord Ramachandra would
would converse with the sages, and then later on he had encountered a demon. It's stated that that demon was so powerful. This demon was towering like a mountain, and the demon was walking on the path with the sword. And hanging on the sword were four lions were hanging on the sword, three tigers, a couple of wolves, 10 spotted deer, all pierced by the sword and hanging on his shoulder. And he's walking, you know. And then, of course, there was a fight encounter with him and Lord Ram and what's his brother name?
Lakshman.
Yeah. Lord, yeah. So, this demon was actually a Gandharva being cursed, and the curse was when he meets with Lord Ramachandra, he will be alleviated from that curse. See? So that's how. That's how this demon got back his body as a Gandharva. After Lord Ramachandra killed him, he got back. Then Lord Ramachandra went to another spot, and he met a sage called Sutikshna. When he met Sutikshna would converse, and then Sutikshna would introduce him to Agastya Muni. And most of you must have heard of Agastya Muni. Agastya Muni is not an ordinary sage. He is very powerful, as Maharaj knows. Agastya Muni had drunk up the whole ocean one time. I don't know if y'all know that story, but when there was a fight between the demigods and the demons, the Danavas were taking shelter in the ocean. And because they were taking shelter in the ocean, the demigods couldn't get to hit them. And so they went to Agastya Muni. And Agastya Muni says, okay, I'll do something. And he said, Agastya Muni drank up the ocean, and so the demigods were able to kill the demons. See? So powerful. So it's stated that Lord Ramachandra went to that place where Agastya was. The whole ashram was like the Indra heavenly planet. It stated the place was packed with spiritual potency, and the trees were hanging with so much fruit and flowers. See, fruits and flowers that. You just take whatever you want. In fact, in the Vayu Puran, it's also stated that in the pure ages, it's stated in Satyug, the earth produces food of its own accord. All the inhabitants in Satyug were like Hamsa. They're all exalted devotees, and the earth would produce nectar, and they would just drink that nectar, and they survived. That's what Vayu said. Then stated in Treta Yuga, the fruit trees start to grow on their own accord. You see, they just grow by themselves and produce ample fruits. And they were also wish-fulfilling trees also, like Kalpavriksha. You see? So it's stated here that when Lord Ramachandra went to Agastya Muni's place, it was packed with fruits and flowers, and the trees were bending like low, filled with fruits. And there were beautiful swans and birds and beautiful lake with lotus flowers and so forth. See? And so this is how Lord Ramachandra, he spent his time in exile during that time. See, in one sense it's like, even though it was exile, but it was like paradise in some ways. I mean, we know he went through all of that calamity of killing all these rakshasas and so forth, but like that. So Vidura is traversing the path that these personalities have taken also. He's traversing. And not only these holy places, but he also went to many holy temples that were created. Many holy Vishnu temples, like Like yesterday we read, and I, my last class I was saying that, that India is Bharat Varsha. And the way I said that is because all the Puranas pointed to it. If you read all the Puranas, the description said, from the snow-capped Himavat to Kanyakumari, right? That tract of land is called Bharat Varsha. You see, and all the rivers and mountains and so are all descriptions are given. So then, so my contention was, was since India is Bharat, Asia has to be Jambudvipa. And the other continents, they are the other dvipas, Kusha dvipas, Kuncha dvipas. You see? Because you, once you enlarge it, once you find one point, like when you're doing a puzzle, you get a point, right? You get one answer, then you could actually get the other answers. You see? So if India is Bharat Varsha, then the other eight Varshas have to be around India. They have to be. That's the description in the Bhagavad. All the Varshas, every Dvipa is divided into nine Varshas, and so Asia would have been Jambudvipa, and then the other. I mean, if there's a description, Lord Shiva gave a description in one of the, in another scripture, that he gave the description about the oceans and so on. And those oceans, milk oceans and lake and so, they have must disappeared long. Anyhow, that's another point. But coming back to this, this point here, that Bharat Varsha is packed with so much sacred places. See, so many sacred places. And so Vidura traversed all of them. Then Srila Prabhupada within his purport spoke about the Varnashram system and stated that society, in fact it's stated in the Manu Samhita, for the protection of the world, the Lord established the Varnashram system. But that system is not usually established in Satyuga because everyone is Hamsa. See? So it's usually established in Treta Yuga. See, it's Treta Yuga. And during that time there are actually more sages and more Kshatriyas and you know. But the place is not so populated then too, you know, and then little by little things are established. But And so Srila Prabhupada, he was speaking about the Varnashram system being established and the Brahmanas coming from the mouth of the Lord, the Kshatriyas from his chest, the Vaishyas from his belly and the Sudras on his thighs. See, that's how the system is organized. But Varnashram is predominant in Treta Yuga and Dwapara. In Kali Yuga it's waning and you could see it's almost null, really. I mean, there's residue of it in India. It's called the caste system. But it's not like how it was in the previous ages. Varnashram system was very powerful. And not only in Bharat Varsha was the Varnashram system. Because all the Aryan kings used to rule the world. Most of the Aryan kings. Srila Prabhupada spoke about Yudhishthira here ruling the whole world. We'd say Parikshit was the last emperor of the world, great emperor of the world. But Yudhishthira, but then you had other great kings that ruled the world. And so if they had ruled the world, they would have established the Varnashram system. So the Varnashram system would have been throughout the world in the other ages also. And also it was the Vedic culture was prevalent in the whole world also in the other ages. It's only recently you have Christianity came about. But before Christianity, what were the people doing? They were practicing Vedic culture. I mean, they were called pagans and so forth. But and then Buddhism. Most of the Buddhists was practicing Vedic culture. And then you have Islam, and we know even Islam, all these Pakistan, all these places, Iran, they were all practicing Vedic culture in the past. You know, if you look at the names of these countries, Iran is Vedic. Saudi Arabia, they say that Arabia come from the word Hara. Hara, and Hara was a name of Lord Shiva, you see. Like Syria is coming from the word Surya, so forth. You know, so Vedic culture were predominant in the past ages. And one reason is because most of the Vedic kings were ruling the world, see? But now in this Kali, it's different. Everything is confined. And so the Varnashram system, Srila Prabhupada stated that that was established. And then the point he was making is that the Brahmanas were powerful. The Brahmanas. And they were called, they were especially in Dwija. Let's see what the Brahmanas were called here. Dwija Deva. Sometimes they were called Dwija Deva. The Brahmanas. Like just like the kings were called Nara Deva. The kings were called Nara Deva. See? And the Brahmanas were called Dwija Deva. And they established many temples for Lord Vishnu. But he was also saying that the devas would come to earth. In the previous ages, devas used to frequently visit the earth and do many things, really, associate with their devotees and bathe in the rivers and so forth. Indra. Well, of course, Indra used to constantly come, but his role was mostly to look at the beautiful ladies. If you know the story, you tell me. One time he had a Lord Gautama's wife, and then because of that, Gautama caught him and caused him to for his testicles to fall off, and then he caused his wife to become invisible. So actually, when Ramachandra went to that site, He liberated her. Gautama could have seen in the future, and Gautama told his wife Ahalya that when Lord Ramchandra comes, she would liberate. Lord Ramchandra would liberate her, and that was like for such a long time. See, so all these holy sites were established by the Brahmanas and the demigods. Another point Srila Prabhupada made here is the moon. He stated that the moon is teemed with life. And we can say not only the moon, but all the planets are teemed with life. But we don't have the vision to see. Our vision is limited and programmed just to see physical things. But so many things are going on that we cannot able to see, you see? So that's why. But me and Prana Govinda had a conversation about the moon, and we had a little tangle. Because I told him, look, I mean, he was writing an article about the moon, and it was very long, and I said, look, the answer is very simple. If six countries have gone to the moon, the problem has solved. They definitely would know the distance, you see? They definitely would know the distance. And Srila Prabhupada told his B.I. disciples, you know, any controversial topic you have, work on. So I told Prana, look, it's not our headache, it's their headache. Let it work on it. But as far as I'm concerned, it's not a dilemma anymore. I mean, it's, you know, that's clear. All these countries must. And while I was doing the study for this class, I saw it marked Chandrayaan, or Chandragan. That is, India has just sent a spaceship to the moon also. So if they're doing that, they must know the distance of the moon. See, we're all devotees, and we're all, we should be all honest with ourselves and everything. If they have done that, if they have sent space probes there, then they must know the distance of it, really, So I think that's clear. So I told Prana, that is clear. It's not a big problem, just that. And we just have to figure out how to, or the BI guys have to figure out how to explain it to the world, that's their task. And let's see what other ones. Oh, so also it's stated that Lord Krishna's main weapon is the chakra. And in most of the Vishnu temples, the chakra is on top, it's very high above. And so it's establishing a highway that one can see the Lord from there. You see, when one sees the chakra, he's reminded of the Lord. And he's reminded that this is Vishnu, this is a Vishnu temple. And so this is how we're able to know all these temples. And so Vidura traversed, went to visit so many of these temples also. I remember when we used to do Sankirtan in Guyana. I mean, that time really it was difficult. We used to sell a lot of stuff to the Hindus because they were our great supporters. But it's not easy to tell who is a Hindu and who is a Christian. You see? So then sometimes we would look in the yard and they would have like a flag. Or they would have like a little symbol on their house, like a swastika symbol, or they would have something. You see? And so it was easy for us to approach it. You see? So the point has been made here. So this is where you're able to distinguish. So this is how the devotees are able to distinguish the Vishnu temples, by that. Then Srila Prabhupada made another point about the atheists, really, and he's saying that their conception, the atheist conception of the of temples being established recently is not true. And you see, the atheist conception is man evolved, and they evolve after the other species. And it's only 200,000 since humans came. And the first humans were very primitive. And now only that they become a little more advanced like that. That's the atheistic conception. But that's not true. So Srila Prabhupada is saying that temples were established since in Treta Yuga. Maybe in Satyuga there were not temples because there was no need for temples. It's stated that the inhabitants were residing in caves and so on. But in Treta Yuga, temples were established. The Manu Samhita gave clear descriptions how temples should be made, where the doors should be located, how it should be, how the palaces of kings should be built, how the houses of humans should be built. They're all clearly defined and explained. See, no speculation. So Srila Prabhupada rightly said that the atheistic conception is totally wrong. And then of course this is our fight against the atheists. I am constantly battling them online. And I hammer them heavy sometimes. I put these useless atheists. Yeah. Anyhow, so that's the point, and then I'll conclude with Vidura leaving the planet. And at the end of Vidura's life, he decided to observe the Mauna vow, and he put pebbles in his mouth, and he would not speak. And when he was about to leave his body, he merged into Yudhishthira's body. That's how Mahabharata explained how he left this earth. Anyhow, so I'll stop here. If there's any comment, correction, question, whatever. Yes, yes, Maharaj. Let me give Maharaj first, and then you,
Hare Krishna. Sorry, I came a few minutes late.
That's okay, Maharaj.
I was up very, very late last night. I had a conference call and this and that. A lot of the information that you're sharing is kind of vaguely familiar. A lot of it is kind of new to me. So thank you for that shower of refreshing information, I guess mostly from the Mahabharata.
Lots from the Mahabharata and Ramayana also. Yeah.
Ramayana also, yeah. Yeah. Just one thing, that not to jump off your narrative, but one thing that comes to mind that is very pertinent to our attempt to become actual devotees is you mentioned how in one place you mentioned the trees were bending down. Some of you know where I'm going with this now. But the trees were bending down. There was so much laden with fruits, flowers too, but I guess the fruits made them weigh them down. And so they were bending down. And I remember years ago, some of you are familiar with the example, the metaphor of the devotee who actually becomes full in realization and spiritual knowledge, then he naturally becomes more humble, and that's compared, and he'll bow down, he'll lower himself, and that's compared to the trees that you
referred to.
Just a little point.
That's a great point there, because in one sense we could even say that the trees were bowing down to Lord Ramachandra also. It's stated in the Krishna Leela, in one of the books, it's stated when Lord Krishna is walking in the path in Vrindavan, in the forest.
He tells Balaram, just see how the trees are bowing down.
The trees would bow down to him. He stated that the when he's playing his flute, the rocks would melt. The rocks would melt and the animals would become stunned. You see, their hair would be raised and they can't move. They're all like in paralysis. And the trees, it's stated, would bow down to him. You know? So
when I was walking over here, I noticed that there were just a few animals I saw. Big bull standing there, and an old cow standing here. And I don't know, I mean, I wish it were that they were stunned by some type of vision of Krishna, but they were also just completely immobile. They were just like statues. And I was thinking to myself, they don't get bored, they just stand there. But maybe they will get stunned, as you were saying. Animals.
Every creature has its own part, you know, and yeah. How do you go? What's your good name?
My name is Hannah Forrest.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the teachings today. I was wondering if you're speaking of the holy center, like the holy places, the Ganges,
yeah,
in India. Do you know of any holy places that are recognized that in the United States or around here?
The centers Srila Prabhupada have established in the world and his devotees, they are all holy centers and they are packed with spiritual potencies, all of them. You go to any one of the centers that ISKCON has established here and the devotees are full of spiritual potencies. So there's no doubt about that. All you should do is just surrender right away.
I feel that. That's why I was drawn here. I don't know how I found it.
It is.
I appreciate it.
When you're ready, they say when the student is ready, the teacher arrives, you know? So you're probably ready, you know? And so,
here's
our teacher.
In nature, is there places that you know of, though? Like you say, like they got, like, as far as like being the woods or rivers or oceans?
There are places, I mean, because like in the other yugas, people here also must have done a lot of sacrifices and things. And they are like we know the American Indians, they used to do a lot of things in the past. But in the pure ages where they would have done it real, you know, in the real Vedic way, those places are possibly still existing, you know, but I mean, I don't know of any pond, but they would have spiritual potency. But the places with the best spiritual potency are the ISKCON centers. So that's the highest, and so we have to accept that. All right, thank you. That's a good question.
Okay, I don't want to over-contribute. It occurred to me that when you were making this interesting philosophical speculation about the position of Bharadvaj and then...
It's not a speculation, Maharaj. That's the conclusion of all the scriptures. Okay, but let us go, yeah? I'm listening.
Well, you can always learn something. The point is that Sataputta Prabhu was extremely well endowed with, when he passed away, various very senior devotees confirmed that he was nothing less than a true genius in every sense of the term. So he also discussed the positions of different planets and different features, and he actually provided three different paradigms of how to understand, and they're all valid. One of them was pretty much similar to what you mentioned, but he also provided other perspectives. So I would refer people, there was a great article in Back to Godhead magazine about that, and I believe that gets into his Vedic cosmology, Vedic astronomy, and some other books he wrote.
I've read them, but I mean, sometimes I'm thinking we have to look at things in a lot of different angles, and so when the Varshas were divided, there were 1,000 yojanas, and 1,000 yojanas is 8,000 miles, but 9,000 yojanas, one Varsha was 9,000 yojanas. So if you look at a distance, 9,000 yojanas, 72,000 miles. 72,000 miles, the whole world doesn't have a diameter of something, of, you know, the diameter of this earth is, what, maybe, how much?
Around 25,000.
Yeah, the diameter.
Oh, the diameter. Not the diameter.
Yeah. Yeah. So the diameter is much less. Like that, yeah. But from north to south is just about 8,000 or 9,000 miles. The whole earth, you know. So there's many. You're right, really. There's many ways to look at it too, really. But also we have to look at the possibility of shrinkage, because in my last class I was saying Lanka was said to be 1,000 yojanas, and Lanka is just like 200 miles across, you see? So 1,000 yojanas would have been like 8,000 miles. That's the length of the thing. So it means then the earth must have shrunk and all, everything, you know. I mean, there's so many ways to look at it, but anyhow, I appreciate your point, Maharaj, and, you know, what Prabhupada, Sariputta have written also. Any other point? Prabhus? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam.